It's Thursday and time again for Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites and our Veterans Service Organization's publications and websites, as well as the Veterans Administration. So let's kick this off with news from the Stripes.com website, news from Stars and Stripes newspaper. Our first headline, four top military retirees, including leader of Bin Laden raid, joined veterans fight over housing. This is actually from the Los Angeles Times, reported on Stripes.com. It's by Doug Smith from the 28th of February. Four retirees from the top echelons of the U.S. military, including the admiral who led the raid on Osama bin Laden, have filed a brief that castigates the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs' neglect of homeless veterans in Los Angeles as a direct threat to national security. Retired admirals Michael G. Mullen, former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and William H. McRaven, who led the raid in Pakistan, signed on to the brief filed with the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in support of a district court order requiring the VA to build thousands of housing units on its West Los Angeles campus. They were joined by two other high-level Army retirees, General Peter W. Schiarelli, who, as Vice Chief of Staff, oversaw the Army's 1.1 million active and reserve soldiers, and Colonel David W. Sutherland, who was Special Assistant to the Chair of the Joint Chiefs, responsible for warrior and family support. Several veterans groups separately filed a brief supporting the order, the Vietnam Veterans of America, California State Council, and four VVA chapters, the AMVETS Department of California, and the Military Order of the Purple Heart. The VA is appealing U.S. District Court Judge David O. Carter's order requiring it to provide 750 units of temporary supportive housing on the campus within 18 months and come up with a plan to add up to 1,800 units of permanent housing within 6 years. Carter also voided leases of large chunks of the campus to UCLA and the private Brentwood School. Under pressure from the judge, the K-12 Academy agreed to a new lease expanding veterans' access to its 22-acre athletic facility. That lease and a fast-tracked effort to get about 100 of these units open this spring, some of them on UCLA's baseball stadium parking lot, were both put on hold when the Ninth Circuit stayed Carter's order. In its appeal, the VA said being forced to pay for that housing and losing control over its leasing authority would cause it irreparable harm. A hearing is scheduled for April 8th. Attorneys for the veterans filed a 65-page brief dissecting fine points of the U.S. Rehabilitation Act and the nature of a fiduciary duty that Carter ruled the government bears under the 1888 gift of the 388-acre campus for the establishment, construction, and permanent maintenance of a home for disabled soldiers. The retired brass and veterans organizations added emotionally charged addenda to that legalistic document. The four former officers raised the prospect of undermining the military as it faces one of its most challenging recruiting crises since the all-volunteer forces began in 1973. The U.S. is fielding its smallest military force since the end of World War II at a time when the complexity and scope of three global threat environments in the South China Sea, in Eastern Europe, in the Middle East, is a high watermark, they wrote. They attribute the decline in enlistments to a loss of faith in the government's commitment to care for disabled veterans at a time when military service is associated with war trauma leading to physical and psychological harms such as PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and elevated suicide risk. When the VA does not honor its obligation to provide supportive housing on the WLA VA campus, Recruits see illness and homelessness awaiting them on the other side of combat, they wrote. The VA's failure to reintegrate disabled and homeless veterans undermines the military's best source for recruiting, the veterans themselves. Veterans are often the military's most effective recruiters, especially of their family members. Yet, only 63% of veterans would recommend enlisting in the military, a 12-point drop from 2019. The veterans organizations argued that veteran homelessness, which had been on a downward trend, has been exacerbated by the recent Palisades and Eaton fires. The fires demonstrate that loss can come quickly and unexpectedly to any veteran, and that more housing is needed right now, they wrote. Citing census data, they estimated that 250 veterans lost homes in the Eaton fire and 170 in the Palisades fire. Though conceding that not all the displaced veterans will become homeless, they wrote that the widespread devastation all but ensures that some, and possibly many, will, as the fires have seriously exacerbated the Los Angeles area's affordable housing crisis. The VA did not respond to an email requesting comment. The dire conditions that prompted the district court to grant injunctive relief have only worsened, they wrote. The court should affirm the judgment. That's four top military retirees, including leader of Bin Laden raid, join veterans fight over housing. Our next article is from the 3rd of March and is actually from the day of New London, Connecticut, and is by Allison Cross and reported on Stripes.com. Petition seeks to name submarine after the Silent Service's first hero. This is Putnam, Connecticut. The nation's only enlisted submariner to receive the Medal of Honor lies in a grave at St. Mary's Cemetery in Putnam, Connecticut. He did something that everybody in the military questions whether they would do. Brian Maynard, past commander of American Legion Post 13, said, "You hope that if the situation arose, you would, but everybody always questions, would you?" And Henry Brialt did. In 1923, when a Navy submarine started to sink near the Panama Canal, Brialt sacrificed his only means of escape to ensure that his shipmate would have a chance at survival. After a 31-hour rescue operation, both men made it out of the wreckage alive. Today, more than a century after President Calvin Coolidge awarded Brialt the Medal of Honor in 1924, a coalition of more than 2,000 men and women across the country are petitioning the U.S. Navy to name a Virginia-class submarine in Brialt's honor. On Saturday, March the 8th, 101 years to the day after Brialt's award, the town is placing a spotlight on the nationwide effort with Henry Brialt Day in Putnam during a ceremony planned for noon at Veterans Park. He was the first submariner, and to this day is the only enlisted submariner to ever have received the Medal of Honor, said Maynard, one of the founding members of the Henry Brialt Association. For Putnam, it's a remarkable honor because there's no other town that can claim this. Brialt's story started in Putnam, where he was born on October 14, 1900, but his legacy was solidified off the coast of Panama on October 28, 1923, when a commercial steamship struck the USS O-5. Less than a minute after the collision, the O-5 sank. But before the submarine descended into the water, Brialt had a choice. Instead of jumping overboard to safety through the access hatch, Brialt closed the hatch, went back into the torpedo room where his shipmate was trapped, and sealed the chamber's watertight door shut. Had he escaped and left the hatch open, those who remained on board would have died from the flooding. He made a split-second decision based on the fact that he hadn't heard that they were abandoning ship, said Ryan Walker, an adjunct naval history professor at the United States Naval Community College and the author of The Silent Service's First Hero, a book on Brialt's life. His action saved the life of Lawrence Brown and likely another guy named Charles Butler who managed to self-escape in a different compartment. Walker was 20 years old when he first learned Brialt's story in enlisted submarine school. It was the first time I understood what being a submariner meant, Walker said. He represents, in my mind, the entire submarine force and the duties we expect of submariners. When the O5 sank, Walker said, the Navy had no established escape or rescue procedure for submarines. He said it was hours before a diving team tapped on the hull of Brialt's chamber in search of survivors. The only way to escape that the Navy had tried was through the torpedo tubes, Walker said. One person can go in the torpedo tubes, and they could essentially flood the tube and let them swim out by opening the door. But crucially, one person would have to stay behind to do that. So at some point, Brialt and Brown look at each other and say, "It's either both of us or neither of us are going to make it out of here." So they guess they had about 48 hours of oxygen, and they decided to wait it out. As they waited, Walker said, a battery explosion ignited an electrical fire in an adjacent chamber. They must have literally felt they were boiling alive in the already tropical waters, Walker said. It took 31 hours to complete the rescue. Walker said barges carried the submarine through the Panama Canal where divers could clear the wreckage and pull the vessel to the surface. The winch snapped three times before rescuers successfully lifted Brialt and Brown's chamber. When they raised, they asked both of them, "How did you guys make it?" And Lawrence Brown said, "Brialt is the reason I made it. Brialt saved my life," Walker said. After 30 minutes, Walker said, Brialt was taken away to a hyperbaric chamber for caisson's disease, also known as the bends or decompression sickness. "He almost died," Walker said. "I firmly believe that's why he had a young life. He died in 1941 at 41 years of age because he never probably fully recovered." After earning the Medal of Honor for his bravery and sacrifice on that day, Walker said Brialt went on to receive the Yangtze Service Medal and served in China during a period of time where China was not a safe place to be. By 1935, Walker said, Brialt was disqualified from submarine service after failing an eye exam. He spends the rest of his career trying to get back on a submarine, Walker said. When he gets someone to sign off that he's requalified for submarine duty, he heads out to the lovely New London submarine base. He gets to the medical examination and they say, "This man belongs in a hospital." Brialt was sent to a naval hospital in Newport, Rhode Island. Walker said medical records show Brialt was experiencing severe chest pain and had difficulty breathing. On December 5, 1941, the autopsy report says he was sweeping the passageway. He said he had a good amount of sleep, and suddenly, while he was sleeping, he just keeled over dead, Walker said. They believe his heart gave out. Walker said Brialt was largely lost to history until 2000, when the Navy launched an effort to incorporate Brialt into the nation's submarine heritage. Walker said there's a pier at Pearl Harbor named in his honor and a plaque in Wilkinson Hall at the submarine base in Groton, but there's never been a naval vessel named in his honor. Walker's petition to name a Virginia-class submarine, the USS Henry Brialt, has amassed nearly 2,200 signatures from across the country, including communities in New York, Vermont, California, and Washington, where Brialt once lived. "We just have a huge opportunity here to show unified support for the submarine force from multiple states and the entire nation," Walker said. "This isn't just one person's idea. This is 2,000 people's idea." Walker said Brialt personifies the principles of ship, shipmate, self, and the fighting spirit of the Navy in the Sailor's Creed. When faced with a tremendous situation, Brialt chose, above all, to do everything in his power for the ship and the shipmates before worrying about himself, at great risk to himself and probably to his detriment, Walker said. He did everything he could to make sure his friends and the people on board would have a fighting chance, and there's something to be said about that. Brialt's action, that is, the fighting spirit, and to embody that in a submarine, I think would be great for the Navy's recruitment, for retention, and for recognizing how important its personnel are to the mission, Walker said. That's Petition Seeks to Name Submarine After the Silent Service's First Hero. Our next article is from the Gazette, from Colorado Springs, Colorado, reported on Stripes.com by Mary Shin from the 3rd of March. Angel of Death advises Air Force Academy cadets on coming conflict. As her C-130H gunship approached enemy combatants in Afghanistan, former Air Force Colonel Allison Black's voice came across the field radio, shocking a Northern Alliance general. A navigator on board, she was part of a crew that killed 200 combatants, and the Afghan general dialed into the Taliban frequency to tell them about Black. America is so determined they bring their women to kill the Taliban. It is the angel of death raining fire upon you, the general said, according to an Air Force profile of Black. It was a mission early on in the Afghanistan war that spanned a large part of Black's 32 years in the Air Force. She reflected on the war and lessons in leadership during a recent National Character and Leadership Symposium at the Air Force Academy. The event was attended by students from other universities and schools, such as the New Mexico Military Institute. She started as an enlisted airman, working as a survival, evasion, resistance, and escape specialist, also known as a SARI specialist. She went on to work in Special Operations Forces and flew 2,000 combat hours in the AC-130H Spectre gunship and U-28A Draco, used for the intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. She retired as a colonel and commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing. Black noted that before September 11, 2001, the U.S. didn't know how to fight specifically in Afghanistan, in the air, or on the ground. Our people were problem solvers. Our people came together and we adapted, she said. As the U.S. prepares for conflict in Russia and China, those problems will fall to future officers studying at the academy. While those problems on the ground, air, and space might be intimidating, particularly as officers, she encouraged them to rely on their teams. She also encouraged her audience to learn from their failures and share them with their teammates so they can grow together. Failure doesn't taste good, doesn't feel good, doesn't look good. But what you do in that moment, what you do with that lesson, defines you as a warrior, she said. Regardless of what color your skin is, what your gender is, we want good teams, we want people who want to mentally be there, she said. That's Angel of Death, advises Air Force Academy cadets on coming conflict. Next from Stripes.com, veterans feel scared and disrespected by mass firings throughout the federal government. This article by Linda F. Hershey is from the 4th of March, Washington. Veteran service organizations castigated the administration of President Donald Trump for sweeping cuts of federal jobs that are hitting veterans who represent nearly one-third of the civilian government workforce and receive their medical care at the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Trump administration's move to freeze aid to nonprofits, axe hundreds of VA contracts with community nonprofits, and fire thousands of federal workers jeopardize services to some of the most vulnerable veteran populations, including paralyzed veterans and homeless veterans, advocates said Tuesday at a joint hearing of the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees. These actions have complicated the hard work of ending veteran homelessness, said Catherine Monet, chief executive officer at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Monet referred to the spending reductions and mass firings ordered by the Trump administration and carried out by the Department of Government Efficiency, formed by Trump advisor Elon Musk. More firings are expected in the coming weeks. Tuesday's three-hour hearing was supposed to focus on the legislative priorities of about a half a dozen veteran service organizations, but one by one, advocates raised concerns about the mass firings at the VA, along with cuts to community funds and contracts that nonprofits rely on to assist veterans. The VA's specialty care system for paralyzed veterans needs to be preserved for their complex needs, said Robert Thomas, president of Paralyzed Veterans of America. There are concerns the system is being slowly starved of infrastructure, staff, and services when thousands of veterans rely on it. He said paralyzed veterans and their loved ones are signing a petition urging the Trump administration not to dismantle the VA-based services for spinal cord injuries and disorders. He said the level of medical expertise on catastrophic war injuries and treatment are not available anywhere else. Several leaders from the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the nation's largest veteran service organization, urged lawmakers to ensure the VA has the staff and resources for veterans to receive timely care, benefits, and disability compensation that they qualified for through their military service. Everyone who served honorably met their end of this agreement. We demand our leaders do the same and ensure VA has the staff and resources so veterans can receive their full earned benefits. This is not an ask. Honor the contract with our veterans, said Al Lippert, the VFW's national commander. There's nothing more sacred than taking care of those who serve this nation, and this has got to be fixed. We have 1.4 million members, but we represent 18 million veterans. They all need to be treated with respect. General Ruben Gallego, Democrat of Arizona, Marine Corps veteran, said he's hearing from veterans fired from their federal jobs. He said they're feeling a sense of betrayal. These are guys who went into federal service after military duty because they wanted a mission-oriented job and to continue to give back to their country, Gallego said. They're scared. They feel disrespected by the fact that they're being treated this way. He said there are better, more effective ways a federal workforce reduction could be handled instead of arbitrary layoffs of thousands of workers. Gallego, along with other lawmakers and veteran service groups, said they were dismayed by the attitude of Musk, who waved a chainsaw in the air at a conservative political action conference in February when he discussed the mass workforce reduction. Gallego said neither Musk nor the young staffers hired to execute the layoffs have military experience. VFW leaders said they're focusing on helping the more than 6,000 veterans who lost their federal employment find new jobs and not fall into homelessness. You're going to hear more from us and see us a lot more, Lippert told lawmakers. We want to make sure the firings are stopped, said Patrick Murray, acting executive director at the VFW in Washington, D.C. While each person was deemed not essential, their jobs were still important. We want to make sure our veterans are gainfully employed and the high performers are not fired indiscriminately. Monet also urged lawmakers to fully fund programs that aim to help unemployed veterans regain jobs and keep their homes. She also said the grant pause of federal aid to nonprofits at the end of January caused a chilling effect on community organizations serving veterans outside the VA. It gave the impression the federal government was willing to arbitrarily allow nonprofit organizations to foot the bill for services they had legal agreements to be reimbursed for, Monet said. The Office of Management and Budget halted the freeze directed by the Trump administration, but contracts are under review. Some nonprofits said their funds have not returned and their agreements are on hold pending the outcome. Lawmakers also shared stories from constituents who are veterans. Representative Kelly Morrison, Democrat of Minnesota, said her office is learning about veterans, some of them disabled, terminated from jobs at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. The Minneapolis VA already is dealing with staff shortages, said Morrison, a physician. The last thing they need to do is terminate people without cause through no fault of their own. Each staff member at a clinic or hospital has a role that's important to patients, she said. If no one is there to answer the phone when someone calls, that's a denial of benefits, said Senator Angus King, independent of Maine. He said seven workers were recently fired from Tougas VA Military Center in his state as part of the federal workforce reduction. Five were veterans. That's a hell of a way to treat someone who put their life on the line for this country, King said. That's veterans feel scared and disrespected by mass firings throughout the federal government. Well, let's turn now to militarytimes.com, the website of the Military Times newspaper. Suspected Abbeygate bombing planner in custody, Trump says. This is by Eric Tucker of the Associated Press and Zeke Miller, also of the Associated Press. a suspected senior planner in the suicide bombing at the Kabul airport that killed 13 American service members during the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, has been taken into custody and will appear Wednesday in federal court in the United States to face charges. President Donald Trump announced the arrest during his Tuesday night address to Congress, with the White House and the Justice Department subsequently identifying the suspect as Mohammed Sharifullah. Officials accuse him of being a member of the Islamic State group's Afghanistan affiliate, known as ISIS Khorasan or ISIS-K, and say he admitted his role in that attack and others during an interview with FBI agents on Sunday after being taken into custody. Senior Pakistani intelligence officials on Wednesday confirmed the arrest and said Sharifullah, also known as Jafar, was captured in the country's restive southwest Balochistan province near the border with Afghanistan after multiple operations had failed to seize him. The officers, who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to talk to the media, said Sharifullah had joined the militant group in 2016 and was involved in numerous attacks across Afghanistan. Sharifullah is charged in federal court in Virginia with providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization, resulting in death. He will face a judge on Wednesday and be assigned a lawyer to speak on his behalf. Additional charges are possible as the case moves through the court system. Trump, in his address to Congress, said he was pleased to announce that we have just apprehended the top terrorist responsible for that atrocity, and he is right now on his way here to face the swift sword of American justice. The Abbeygate bombing, in the waning days of an airlift for those fleeing the Taliban takeover of the country amid the withdrawal by U.S. forces from the country, occurred in August 2021 when a suicide bomber attacked crowds of Afghans flocking to Kabul's airport. Besides 13 U.S. service members, about 170 Afghans were also killed in the attack, which triggered widespread congressional criticism and undermined public confidence in President Joe Biden's administration. According to an FBI affidavit filed as part of the case, Sharifullah admitted under questioning to having joined ISIS-K in 2016 and to having participated in the Abbeygate bombing by scouting a route to the airport for the bomber and communicating to other members of the militant group that the path was clear. The bomber was later identified as Abdul Rahman al-Laghari, an Islamic State group militant who had been in an Afghan prison but was released by the Taliban as the group took control of the country that summer. During his FBI interrogation, Sharifullah also said he had shared firearms and weapons instructions before a March 2024 attack in Moscow that was also carried out by ISIS-K, authorities said. Sharifullah was arrested in 2019 by the U.S.-backed Afghan government at the time, but escaped from prison on August 15, 2021, as the Taliban took Kabul. The Pakistani officials said Sharifullah had planned the bombing from behind bars with other senior militant figures. They said he remained on the run in the border areas of Balochistan until his arrest through a joint intelligence-sharing operation between Pakistan and the U.S. Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif thanked Trump for acknowledging and appreciating the country's role in counterterrorism efforts in Afghanistan. "We will continue to partner closely with the United States in securing regional peace and stability," Sharif said on the social platform X. From Kabul, Taliban chief spokesman Zabiullah Mujahid declined to comment beyond saying that the arrest on Pakistani soil of an Afghan national, a member of the Islamic State group, shows that IS group figures have taken refuge and established havens inside Pakistan. "This issue has nothing to do with Pakistan," Mujahid said. "The regional Islamic State affiliate is a rival group to the Afghan Taliban." Trump had repeatedly condemned Biden's role in the Afghanistan withdrawal on the campaign trail and blamed Biden for the Abbeygate attack. a U.S. official speaking on the condition of anonymity Tuesday night to discuss a case that had yet to be unsealed, said Sharifullah's arrest came after fresh U.S. intelligence community coordination, increased intelligence sharing, and pressure on regional partners to bring those responsible for the attack to account since Trump's swearing in January. That's suspected Abbeygate bombing planner in custody, Trump says. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Hoffman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming like Weekly Reveille streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app available from the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And in addition, the stream is also available on the Amazon Echo and Dot. Next, I'd like to read an article from the publication of one of our veteran service organizations, the Veterans of Foreign Wars. This is from their March-April edition of their magazine, Vets in Focus, Inspiring Profiles of Extraordinary Veterans. The article, A Valuable and Noble Profession with Purpose. A VFW member from Rhode Island spearheaded a gardening program to assist veterans interested in farming. She believes it offers the necessary knowledge and skills for success. This article is by Ishmael Rodriguez, Jr. Overwhelmed by the pressures at work and the birth of her second child in 2017, Tricia Lorenko Butcher sought a reprieve from her mounting PTSD and anxiety symptoms. A member of the Air Force Reserve at the time, Butcher turned to the VA for help and, through several treatment options, discovered that the act of gardening outdoors cultivated the most profound sense of catharsis. I found getting my hands in the soil and using my body to dig, crawl, and haul things around the yard really helped me to process my big feelings, said Butcher, the senior vice commander for VFW Post 916 in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Plus the reward of smelling sweet flowers and eating delicious ripe fruits and vegetables with my little ones made my heart happy. These mental health benefits prompted Butcher, who served with the Rhode Island Army National Guard, the Army, and the Air Force Reserve from 2000 to 2011, to shift her career focus. After earning a bachelor's degree in psychology while in the reserve, Butcher returned to the University of Rhode Island in Kingston to pursue a second bachelor's degree in 2020, this time in plant science and sustainable crop production. The goal was to learn about plants so that I could connect veterans with gardening so they too could heal, said Butcher, who deployed in 2004 with the Army's 1st Infantry Division to Tikrit, Iraq. I started working at the URI agronomy farm, assisting with vegetable crop research and growing vegetables for students to study and for donation to the on-campus free farmers market and local food pantries. Butcher also completed the URI Master Gardeners Training Program and became a Master Gardener Program Coordinator at URI's Teaching Garden, which provided her with necessary experience to take a step closer to helping fellow veterans. When she graduated in 2023, Butcher promptly applied for a Department of Agriculture grant to launch a veteran-friendly program called Boots to Bushels through the URI Cooperative Extension in 2024. The program offers comprehensive 9-month market gardening training courses specifically designed for beginning farmers, military veterans, and their families. Boots to Bushels provides New England-based veterans and beginning farmers courses in the winter and spring taught by agricultural experts from across Northeast. These experts connect participants with knowledge and resources to build a business plan and marketing strategy and develop scientific growing practices, among other things. Winter courses run from January the 21st through March the 27th, with classes held via Zoom on Tuesday and Thursday evenings from 6 to 7:30 p.m. In the spring and summer, the courses also offer optional farm tours and workshops across Rhode Island and Maine, expanding on opportunities to learn and build relationships with farmers. I'm grateful that this program provides an opportunity for veterans to enter the world of agriculture and build relationships with each other and the tight-knit farming community, said Boucher, who serves as program coordinator. Growing food for our neighbors and stewarding the land is a valuable and noble profession with purpose. It requires grit, determination, and skill, which are values deeply embedded in our veterans. I have high hopes that this program will continue to grow and continue to serve as a hub of knowledge and community. Applications to participate in the 2025 classes opened last fall and closed by December the 31st. This article from the VFW Magazine, A Valuable and Noble Profession with Purpose. VFW member from Rhode Island spearheads a gardening program to assist veterans. I get the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter and occasionally the Northern Arizona Healthcare newsletter, and you can subscribe to all of those, but for some reason I missed one from Northern Arizona Healthcare that my son, who works at the VA in Prescott, brought to my attention, and I wish I had received it earlier. So that's kind of one of the things about going on to the va.gov news site and looking for the publication of these newsletters. You can sign up for them and they'll send them to you, and you'll get the latest information right through an email. This one in particular identified a Veterans Benefit Administration help session that was being held here at Flagstaff, and I had the occasion to go over and talk to them about my benefits as a veteran, and the individual that was running the interview session was extremely helpful, got my application filled out, and showed me how I had why I'd been unable to get access to the benefits because I was filling out the wrong form. But at any rate, those Veterans Benefit Administration connections are extremely helpful. And if you have any questions about your veterans benefits or getting registered for your veterans benefits, if you have one of these presentations or one of these sessions in your area, I'd suggest that you go, and they will be extremely helpful in getting you set up to receive any benefits that you have earned. But returning to the veterans news now from the Phoenix VA, we have this. Phoenix VA hosts colorectal cancer screening kickoff. The Phoenix VA hosts colorectal cancer screening kickoff at the Carl T. Hayden VAMC, Veterans Administration Medical Center, on February 26. Jason Lutz, a registered nurse, said the Health Promotion and Disease Prevention team is increasing awareness about colorectal cancer and early detection by having educational displays and expert nurses available to answer questions and provide guidance on colorectal cancer screening and early detection discussions. The nurses are also available to address any concerns veterans may have. The colorectal cancer event also offered information on colorectal cancer screening methods, eligibility, and next steps to make screening more accessible and protect veterans' health. The next planned colorectal event that you'll be able to attend would be for the Staff Sergeant Alexander W. Conrad VA Clinic on March 25th. Then they remind you, My Health eVet on VA.gov. Don't wait, new secure sign-in required by March the 4th. That's a couple of days ago. The Phoenix VA My Health eVet team is helping veterans prepare for secure sign-in account changes with in-person assistance. If you do not already have a login.gov or ID.me secure sign-in account, would like an in-person assistance, bring a valid ID, driver's license, or state-issued ID. A VA ID is not an approved ID. The ID must be in good repair with a clear image of the face. Additionally, a valid phone number, email address, and Social Security number are required to create the account. The Phoenix VA Medical Center MyHealth eVet team can be reached at 602-277-5551, extension 3934. Then they say they have a First Friday dementia series, and it presents a VA resource highlight, memory clinic with VA PACT, PACT social worker, Katie Teagues, and it is who is the VA care partners, providers, and community partners. Be available Friday, March the 7th, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and it's online at bit.ly/4iks5xw or by phone at 1-404-397-1596. And the code is 2820-281-5300. Password is capital PHXVA, lowercase MDC, at 22. The programs of general caregiver support and coach present a monthly dementia education series on the first Friday of every month, covering coping as a caregiver, tips and tools, ask the experts, and community spotlight. You can call 602-277-5551, extension 7393, for more information. And then again, that's the VA Resource Highlight Memory Clinic with VA PACT social worker Katie Teagues, the VA care partners, providers, and community partners on the 7th of March from 11 to 12. We have also national observances. March is National Nutrition Month. March's National Nutrition Month offers us a chance to celebrate our traditions and focus on our whole health. This year's theme is Food Connects Us, which reminds us that the foods we enjoy are often connected to our family, culture, and social connections. Sharing a meal is a way to connect, and every family and culture have meals that are part of our traditions. Consider the kinds of foods that you and your loved ones enjoy. Are they nutritious and healthy, or are they foods that can be consumed only on special occasions or in smaller portions? You may even consider modifying old recipes to make them healthier. Food is an important part of life and health. A healthy diet can reduce pain and inflammation, control blood sugar levels, improve gut health, elevate our mood, improve sleep, and help us maintain a healthy weight. With the help of a VA dietitian nutritionist, veterans can learn how to choose nutritious foods to meet their long-term health goals. Nutrition and Food Services' mission is to care for veterans with complete evidence-based nutrition care. VA facilities across the country offer healthy teaching kitchen programs that teach veterans and their support persons about food, nutrition, and how to prepare and store balanced, healthy dishes. Classes are open to VA-enrolled veterans and a plus one if desired. This can be a partner, family member, caretaker, or anyone involved in helping you purchase and prepare food. Do you love to cook? You'll enjoy recipes, cookbooks, and cooking videos produced by VA's Nutrition and Food Service. And I'll have more on that in a news.va article that I'll be reading after this. Endometriosis is often a chronic condition, is our next item. VA can help. Do you push through severely painful periods, telling yourself it's just bad cramps? If so, it's time to stop brushing aside your symptoms. Severe pain, heavy bleeding, or other symptoms might actually be signs of endometriosis, a condition that affects millions of women. Endometriosis is a condition where tissue that's similar to the inner lining or the uterus grows outside the uterus. These cells respond to changes in your body's hormones and cause inflammation, pain, and sometimes irregular bleeding. Here are five things you should know. Severe pain isn't normal. We all expect some discomfort during a period, but severe pain isn't something you should have to push through. Pelvic or abdominal pain during your period, sex, or bowel movement shouldn't disrupt your life. If over-the-counter medications don't help and the pain makes it hard to function for several days each month, it's time to get help. Additional common symptoms include heavy bleeding or bleeding between periods, difficulty getting pregnant, or digestive issues like bloating, constipation, or diarrhea. Second, early diagnosis matters. Left untreated, pain and symptoms can worsen. The sooner you get diagnosed, the sooner you can start managing symptoms and avoiding complications. Don't wait. Talk to your VA healthcare provider if you're experiencing symptoms. Third, endometriosis is common. About 1 in 10 women of reproductive age have endometriosis. Despite how common it is, it often takes years to diagnose due to lack of symptom awareness. Fourth, endometriosis can affect fertility. If you're having difficulty getting pregnant, endometriosis might be the cause. Between 30 and 50% of women with endometriosis face infertility challenges. Fifth, VA can help you manage your pain. Endometriosis is often a chronic condition, but you don't have to manage it alone. VA offers diagnosis and a range of treatment to help you find relief, including pain medication, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, ibuprofen or naproxen, for example, are available over-the-counter and often help treat menstrual and endometriosis pain. However, if these do not give you enough relief, talk to your provider about other options. Hormone therapy. VA can provide you with medications that suppress the production of hormones in the ovaries, preventing ovulation, menstruation, and endometriosis pain flares. Surgery. VA can diagnose and treat endometriosis through a variety of surgical procedures. Your gynecological surgeon will work with you to determine the best treatment approach for you. Remember, severe pain during your period is not normal. VA understands how overwhelming chronic pain can feel, and we're here to help. Compassionate VA Women's Health primary care providers are available and will listen to your concerns. To learn more about endometriosis, download the Women Veterans Endometriosis Brochure. And if you need help getting started, you can call the Women's Veterans Call Center, and that's at 1-855-VA-WOMEN, W-O-M-E-N, to speak to a real person who can help you enroll, schedule an appointment, and connect you to care you can trust. And to download that brochure, you can go to va.gov and search for endometriosis brochure. Then we have an announcement of a Veterans Lift Up Saturday, March the 8th, and that's at the Summit Community Church, 20555 West Roosevelt Street, and that's in Buckeye, Arizona. There'll be raffles and prizes, resources and benefits, career opportunities, a variety of vendors. The Arizona Department of Veterans Services will be there, and Buckeye VFW, Blue Star Moms, and a variety of other organizations to help support our veterans. Connect, explore opportunities, and access valuable resources with your family in a supportive atmosphere. Breakfast will be provided while supplies last. For more information, contact Buckeye Gen 6975, and that's BUCKEYEJENN 6975 at gmail.com, or dial 602-505-2595. I just said dial that number, and that shows you how old I am. Then we have the second annual Veterans Recreation and Resource Fair. Join us for the second annual Veterans Recreation and Resource Fair, a community-focused event designed to support veteran mental health and well-being through engaging therapeutic activities, live music, and valuable connections. You can explore a variety of resources tailored to veterans, enjoy interactive demonstrations, and connect with local veteran organizations and clubs hosting tables at the event. Whether you're seeking tools for wellness, opportunities to bond with fellow veterans, or simply a day of inspiration and entertainment, this event has something for everyone. That will be Saturday, March the 8th, 2025, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Phoenix College Sophomore Square. And that's at 1202 West Thomas Road, Phoenix, Arizona, 85013. We have here an announcement of a Vietnam War Veterans Recognition and Pinning Ceremony. This is on March the 13th, 2025 at 1 p.m. at the Steele Indian School Park Memorial Hall. If you're a Vietnam veteran or know of any Vietnam veteran that would like to be honored during the ceremony, RSVP to PR Phoenix, PRPHOENIX at va.gov or call 602-222-2667, no later than the 10th of March, 2025. And this, the announcement is the Phoenix VA Healthcare System is hosting a ceremony to recognize the return of our veterans from the Vietnam War. The United States of America Vietnam War Commemoration will join us to recognize, honor, and present commemorative lapel pins to Vietnam veterans, March the 13th at 1 p.m. If you're a Vietnam veteran or know of any veterans that would like to be honored during the ceremony, please RSVP to PR Phoenix at va.gov no later than March the 10th. When your attendance is confirmed, we will confirm the event location. And it says this event is free and open to all veterans, families, and caregivers. And that location actually is Steele Indian School Park Memorial Hall. And that's the information from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System Veterans News Now newsletter. Turn now to VA News at news.va.gov for that item celebrating National Nutrition Month that I mentioned earlier. Learn how to choose nutritious foods. This is from the 1st of March by Andrea Young, a health system specialist, and Beth Baer, a registered dietitian. March's National Nutrition Month offers us a chance to celebrate our traditions and focus on our whole health. This year's theme is Food Connects Us, which reminds us that the foods we enjoy are often connected to our family, culture, and social connections. Sharing a meal is a way to connect, and every family and culture have meals that are part of our traditions. Consider the kinds of foods that you and your loved ones enjoy. Are they nutritious and healthy, or are they foods that can be consumed only on special occasions or in smaller portions? You may even consider modifying old recipes to make them healthier. Food is an important part of life and health. A healthy diet can reduce pain and inflammation, control blood sugar levels, improve gut health, elevate our mood, improve sleep, and help us maintain a healthy weight. With the help of a VA dietitian nutritionist, veterans can learn how to choose nutritious foods to meet their long-term health goals. Nutrition and Food Services' mission is to care for veterans with complete evidence-based nutrition care. VA facilities across the country offer healthy teaching kitchen programs that teach veterans and their support persons about food, nutrition, and how to prepare and store balanced, healthy dishes. Classes are open to VA-enrolled veterans and a plus one if you desire. This can be a partner, family member, caretaker, or anyone involved in helping you purchase and prepare food. Do you love to cook? You'll enjoy these recipes, cookbooks, and cooking videos produced by VA's Nutrition and Food Services. And those are available at www.nutrition.va.gov/recipes.asp. Managing your weight helps you stay healthy now and in the future. VA's MOVE weight management program can help increase your knowledge and confidence in achieving your individual health goals. And that also is available at www.move.va.gov. Move can help you reduce health risks, prevent or reverse certain diseases, improve quality of life, and can even help you live longer. Move Coach is an app for anyone who wants to manage their weight. This mobile tool provides users with weight management education and resources in an easy and convenient way. Users can monitor their progress with their health and weight goals. Read Veteran Move Stories, The Power of Change, to be inspired and motivated for your health journey. And the links to that app and those stories is available at news.va.gov and search for health. Make healthy choices at the Veterans Canteen Service. Veterans Canteen Service supports the well-being of veterans, caregivers, family members, and employees through cafeterias, coffee shops, and retail stores offering a variety of food and beverage choices in a comfortable setting. To see what else is in store this month, you can visit the Veterans Canteen Service online at www.vacanteen. That's all one word, vacanteen.va.gov/vacanteen/foodoperations.asp. Food operations, again, one word. National Nutrition Month reminds us that food is an important part of life. By making healthy choices and adding physical activity, we can continue to enjoy the traditions and connections that make our lives meaningful. For recipes, videos, podcasts, and other resources, visit the VA Nutrition and Food Services National Nutrition Month resource page. And again, that link is available by going to news.va.gov and searching for health. That's celebrating National Nutrition Month. Well, this is your volunteer reader, Chuck Hoffman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming at a time of your choosing by simply going to sunsounds.org, the Sun Sounds of Arizona website, and downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app from the Apple App Store for your iPad or iPhone, or the Google Play Store for your Android tablet or phone, or you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo.